catching you up on the latest stories from around the Sunshine State that you should know heading into this Tuesday morning, August 2nd. I'm Matthew Bell.
And I'm Nathaniel Wilson.
And this is The Point from WUFT News.
After decades of pollution suffocated Tampa Bay and killed half its seagrass and much of its marine life, unprecedented political cooperation and hundreds of science-guided projects brought the estuary back to life. I spoke with WUFT's Jack Prater about this process.
So Watershed is a project where the university got grant money from the Pulitzer Center, and we put together a team of 13 reporters at WUFT, and it was run by Cynthia Barnett, who is our sort of resident water and environment reporting guru. So this project wanted to take a deep look at the last 50 years of the Clean Water Act, which is a Nixon-era federal law that, you know, really cracked down on water pollution in the country.
And can you tell me more about your piece specifically?
So Tampa is this place that is sort of heralded as, you know, the cornerstone of water quality in the state. The gist of Tampa Bay's history in a nutshell is that things were terrible before the Clean Water Act came. You know, communities were dumping raw sewage into the bay. It was so bad that silver was eroding from people's homes because the sulfur in the air that had to do with the sulfur mining in the area was just destroying the water and air quality. And so Tampa starts to turn things around after they have the power to do that from the federal government. And once they're able to do that, you know, seagrasses return, manatees return, water clarity returns. But unfortunately, what we're seeing in the last 5 years or so is that things are starting to trend back down again. So Tampa is still having problems, and activists are starting to get worried that we are undoing, you know, decades of important work and important restoration in the Bay. And they're worried that that's starting to become undone in these last few years.
One of the things in your piece that stood out to me was the way that you discussed wealth and its connection to Tampa Bay. You included a quote about how the city couldn't push its pollution off onto poor communities. How much of a role do you think the pollution's effect on Tampa's wealthier residents played in the issue being important?
It has everything to do with that. You know, the reason that this huge Tampa Bay water quality study even came about was because wealthy housewives that lived along Bayshore Boulevard were complaining about the sulfur spill and complaining about their silver tarnishing because of this toxins in the water and the air. And if people with money and influence hadn't come about and sort of pushed for change, we don't know exactly when that would have happened. And, you know, that's something that you see in not a lot of communities, but what you do see, unfortunately, in some communities is that this would be pushed off on poorer communities because they don't have the influence, they don't have the money where the local government would care what they think. You know, we sometimes see things like this in Gainesville. There were solar farms that were going to be put near a Black community last year. And that community was up in arms and saying, hey, no, you can't just put this here because you think that we won't get upset about it. And ultimately, the location of that solar farm, you know, changed. So we are seeing this get better. But this is an early example, you know, of people with that influence wielding that to affect change.
And was there anything that you found over the course of your reporting that you weren't able to include in this piece?
There was a lot that I honestly didn't have time for or just kind of unfolded in a way that, if I'd known this sooner, because I'm learning about this area where I've, you know, never really lived up until this last summer, I could have, you know, tackled this part of it. And I think one of those was, I was really interested in the sulfur industry and how some of the harder core environmental activists in Tampa, you know, reconcile that they share their community with giants of the sulfur industry. Because I talked to a lot of environmentalists who were very practical minded, and they're saying, you know, the sulfur industry is not going anywhere. They've been here for decades. We're not trying to push them out. Even if we wanted to, we couldn't push them out. And I really did try and get in contact with representatives from some of the bigger sulfur companies, but it just didn't work out. And I wish I'd had a little more time to nail that down and get that perspective in here, because I think that's an important one and probably an underrepresented one.
That was WUFT's Jack Prater speaking about Tampa Bay's battle with pollution. Now, let's get into today's top headlines.
About 9,000 teacher vacancies need to be filled around the state for the upcoming school year. In an effort to fill those vacancies, the state of Florida recently announced military veterans and their spouses could teach without a degree. As of Sunday, 83 Alachua County Public Schools teaching and substitute teaching positions are listed on the ACPS website. The Independent Alligator reports that Florida is 48th nationally in average teacher salary, with average teachers making about $50,000 a year. Data from the Florida Agency of Healthcare says there have been nearly 1,000 instances of residents exiting nursing homes without proper authorization between 2017 and 2021. These early exits are potentially dangerous for residents who suffer from dementia or Alzheimer's. Known as elopements in the retirement community, these departures can be triggered by many things, such as words or phrases that residents hear. According to the Alzheimer's Association, almost 9 out of 10 physicians say they expect to see an increase in people living with dementia in the next 3 years, while half of those same physicians say the medical community is not prepared for a steep increase in patients. Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer says the city will set up 6 controlled access points for people entering downtown on Friday and Saturday nights after 7 people were injured in a shooting early Sunday morning. WMFE reports that access points will have dogs and a way to check for people carrying a weapon without a permit. The shooting occurred at the area of Wall Street Plaza and South Orange Avenue. Police are still searching for those responsible. No arrests have been made. Monkeypox cases are rising in the state of Florida and abroad. As of August 1st, the Florida Department of Health reported 442 confirmed or probable cases in 22 counties around the state. This is an increase from last week, when the FDOH reported 273 cases in 16 counties. The Palm Beach Post reports that symptoms of the disease are milder than smallpox. Subscribe to The Point newsletter, which drops the latest Florida stories into your inbox Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. Visit WUFT.org for more information. I'm Matthew Bell.
And I'm Nathaniel Wilson.
And you've been listening to The Point from WUFT News out of the University of Florida. Have a great Tuesday.